This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney. Later in the show, getting companies to embrace the digital age. But first, Kentucky Democrats chose their candidate for governor Tuesday, but the GOP primary race was too close to call. Joining us to discuss the outcome of Tuesday's primary and look ahead at what to expect on the candidates and issues as we head into the November general elections are Trey Grayson, CEO of the Northern Kentucky Chamber of Commerce, Attorney Patrick Hughes, Chairman of the Kentucky Democratic Party, and Attorney Greg Shumate, Chair of the Kenton County Republican Party. And you can join us at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at WVXU.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Patrick, Trey, and Greg, thank you for joining us this afternoon.
Thanks for having us.
You know, there were no surprises with Jack Conway winning on the Democratic side, but Trey, are you surprised the race was so close on the GOP side?
Well, I don't know that anybody would have predicted an 83-vote apparent margin, but the polling all showed a very, very close race, a real jump ball. People would ask me, even off the record in the days leading up to the race, who do you think is going to win? And I can make a case for all three, and I had a hard time picking the three. So the fact that it was pretty close doesn't actually surprise me.
Anybody else surprised by this? Greg?
You know, I think if you would have looked at this 6 months ago, I think you'd be surprised today where we are. But I agree with Trey. Leading up to the election, I think everyone expected. And you know, who expected the surprise of the allegations, you know, regarding Jamie Comer? So, you know, at the end of the day, I think Trey's right. We expected a close race later as the more the race went on.
Yeah, I agree with Greg. It wasn't so much a surprise at the end. What's surprising is just the evolution that occurred in this primary from the day Jamie Comer got in it, then Hal Heiner got in it, and then near the end, as Greg pointed out before the show, Matt Bevin got in a day or two before the filing deadline. And, you know, over the course of a really nasty primary, he came out on top. It was an exciting race.
Patrick, what do you think of the allegations against Comer? Do you think those had any impact on what happened on the GOP side?
You know, those were all very serious allegations. I think, you know, that was best left to the Republican voters to deal with. I'm not sure how it factored into their weight, but that was really a choice for the voters to deal with.
And Trey, what do you think about that?
It clearly had an impact, although I have a hard time saying pro or con. The Comer folks will tell you that their supporters and volunteers got energized in reaction to the debate. And if you look at the way the messages played out at the end, Heiner ended up having a closing ad referencing the rumors and sort of the who he said, she said about who said, you know, who brought it up and that sort of thing, instead of having a traditional closing argument. So it clearly impacted what the voters were talking about into Election Day. Whether it helped or hurt, it's probably hard to say.
So Heiner ended up apologizing at some point, didn't he?
Well, he apologized at the very beginning because the spouse of his running mate had been discovered to have conspired with a blogger to try to get the rumors out there. And then the woman came forward on her own apparently. Although the Comer camp blamed the Heiner folks, and Commissioner Comer even speculated that perhaps she was paid by that campaign, and so it kind of devolved from there, and it clearly became the focus in the last couple of weeks rather than talking about issues or a background or plans for the future.
Greg, if Comer, for whatever reason, should become the candidate after this re-canvass, is there a fear that there's another shoe that's going to drop, that he might become a damaged candidate if anything else comes out about this allegation?
Well, I, you know, in talking with fellow Republicans on election night, you know, there were some that believe that maybe we ended up nominating our candidate with the best chance to win in the fall, mainly because of that concern about whether or not there would be a taint going in to the fall elections. So, yeah, and getting back to the point of whether or not the allegations affected the race, I just keep thinking, can you say Wallace Wilkinson? You know, I mean, this seems to be one of those situations where you've got somebody who, at least under the poll, you know, if you were reading the polling, was clearly a third place, you know, behind the other two who were the definite front runners for the longest time during this election, and all of a sudden he comes in the middle. While the other two are, you know, the famous food fight commercial now, which I think is probably going to go down in history, is one of the most interesting political commercials in the state of Kentucky, I guess, behind Mitch McConnell's chasing the bloodhounds, you know, back in the day. But anyway, so I just keep thinking of the Wallace Wilkinson situation, and this looks to me like a whole lot like that.
So, Trey, Comer wants a re-canvass. Is that like a recount? Can you explain what that is?
Sure. And for those listeners, I used to be the Secretary of State of Kentucky, so this used to be my
job. This is
right up my alley.
That's
right.
Right
up my alley. So a re-canvass, which will take place next Thursday morning and into the early part of the afternoon, is essentially a redo of the counting that took place once the polls closed. So we don't look into voter eligibility. It's a very sophisticated way to check your math. So you take the cartridges from the machines and tabulate them again. Normally when this happens, a vote or two could change. In my time as Secretary of State, my two terms, I never saw more than a few votes one way or another change. So we don't expect a big change from the re-canvass. But it's a free opportunity for an unsuccessful candidate in a close race to try that. And even Matt Bevin said that if he were in Jamie Comer's shoes, he'd be doing the same thing. You kind of owe it to your supporters in a close race like this to do a re-canvass. Next Thursday, assuming the numbers hold, then it's a more difficult situation because that would then be a recount territory where you actually go to court and you have to post bond. You have to pay for the cost of that, and it delays everything. And so there'll be a lot of pressure on Comer if that doesn't change much for Comer at that point to call it off and not pursue it any further. Because every day that the recount takes place, Matt Bevin is not the official nominee of the Republican Party. And there's some fundraising limitations on that, as well as just, you know, just kind of campaigning issues and things like that. So, but next Thursday, there'll be a re-canvass, which is essentially checking the math.
And they can do that re-canvass pretty quickly,
It'll be very quickly. It's done at the County Board of Elections level, and it goes real quick.
Now, how much would it take to trigger a recount?
There's no threshold. So recount, just it's up to the losing candidate to go to court and say, I want a recount. And then you can decide how many votes do you want to recount. You could say, you know, there was a problem in this county. Let's go test that, or let's do a small sample and see if we see any errors. And if there's errors, then we'll go further in. But it's basically up to the judge and to the losing candidate to a certain extent, because they have to post that bond to cover the costs of an actual recount.
So who foots the bill for the recount?
The recount would be the losing candidate post the bond to cover the expenses.
So let's say a recount does occur. Now that would be how far out? That would be in early June?
Well, he would start, you know, he'd probably file it Thursday afternoon, and it would happen
as soon as the recount
started in early June. Yeah.
Yeah. And how long does that usually take? A couple weeks? Or
It depends on how deep they go. There's no set rules. It's all variable. Usually what happens is, and I don't think we've never had one in a statewide race. I believe the last recount of a big race was, Greg, you might remember this, I think in a Louisville congressional race in the mid-90s, there was a really close race, and I think that was the last time we had a recount in a decent-sized race in Kentucky. It's really unusual. Patrick, do you remember any real big recounts?
This is the biggest one where there was even a threat of it in my memory.
Yeah, we had a technical recount in the Westwood Grube race a few years ago, but that was just a state Senate race.
Yeah, that was a recount.
And there was a machine issue there. Yeah. But that wasn't that's kind of an unusual form of a recount.
You know, Trey raised a really interesting point that – you know, beyond all of the mechanics of a re-canvass, a potential recount, you know, from our perspective, you know, this is just delaying what was already a very divisive primary for the Republicans. You know, you've seen where Senator McConnell is holding back on his endorsement of Matt Bevin until it's all final. So every day that it goes on, you know, everybody's still remembering those headlines and those stories from the New York Times about the party being in disarray, and you know the Republicans. One of them mentioned that it's in disarray, an uphill challenge to reunite. McConnell's circle watched with horror as Bevin rose in the polls, and that was in Bloomberg. And I can just imagine. I have a vision of that, of them watching the results. But you know, the challenging part for the Republican Party is, you know, Jamie Comer probably does owe it to his supporters to do this due diligence, if you will, but it's just extending what was already very challenging for them.
So the Democratic Party, you feel like this is to Conway's advantage. This is just going to help our candidate.
Yeah, it really is. You know, it's giving us time as the Democratic candidates in Kentucky up and down the slate to continue running towards the general election while they're still finishing off the primary. So it's from Jack Conway's perspective, it's a positive.
Greg, what do you think of that? I mean, the New York Times did have that article. The headline said Kentucky GOP in disarray. What do you think of that?
Well, from the outside looking in, it's probably pretty easy to say that. But I will say, you know, the Republican Party in Kentucky has been through many, many primaries over the years, one of which was last year's race, Mitch McConnell and Matt Bevin. And we all saw how the GOP coalesced behind Mitch McConnell after that, what, you know, was described at the time as a fairly divisive primary. And they coalesced behind McConnell, and McConnell ended up winning by a much larger margin in his U.S. Senate race than I think most people had originally thought he was going to. So, you know, the Republican Party of Kentucky has been through this before. It's certainly not easy, but, you know, there's a little bit of a dusting off period. Part of the thing, I'm not sure that it's really going to hurt on the delay, at least at the moment, is because typically you've got a two-week cooling period anyway, where, you know, the supporters of the losing candidate, you know, cool off and kind of, you know, heal their bruises a little bit. But then at the end of the day, you know, the rallying cry is, you know, are you interested in right-to-work legislation? Are you interested in some of the issues that are important to Republicans? And if you are, then you're going to support our nominee regardless. And, you know, it gets to the whole question of whether or not primaries are good or whether or not they're bad for a party. That's what our process is. It's a vigorous debate among party people who make a decision about who their best nominee is going to be. That's what we had. We clearly had a vigorous debate. Some say it might go beyond that. So we'll see. This is going to be another test case to see whether primaries are good or bad for a party.
You know, people talk about disarray, but in reality, weren't the candidates who were running on the GOP side, weren't they all pretty much in agreement on the issues anyhow? I mean,
you know,
that could cause a tight race right there.
Well, it's funny you say that. We were out at the Chamber of Commerce event, and I think they agreed on every single event. Trey, you were the moderator. Other than Will T. Scott saying that he's not sure he agrees with the right to work position of the Republican Party, I didn't hear any other differences.
Yeah, there wasn't a lot of substantive disagreement, and that's part of what made the primary such a tough race, because then it gets settled on more personal things, you know, your backgrounds, your history, and that's in, you know, the allegations. It will make it easier to come together. I think I can speak from personal experience. In 2010, I had a pretty divisive primary with now Senator Rand Paul. And while we did have some disagreements on issues, at the end of the day, we were both seeking the Republican nomination, had a lot more overlap in our agreements than we had where we were apart. And when I remember giving my speech at our unity rally, and I cited, you know, these are three or four, like basically the top three or four of the top issues. If you, like me, believe this, then you have to be for him. And it did make it easier for people to come together and accept the candidate. You know, over the years, the Democratic Party, this is very unusual. Normally, they're the ones that have these tough primaries and generally come together in governor's races afterwards. So it's kind of interesting that the shoe's reversed and it's on a different foot, with the Republicans having the tough primary, the Democrats watching with bemusement, as Patrick is right now.
And
you can see the smile on his face.
He's just enjoying this immensely.
You know, what they said was accurate. Generally, there's one distinction, and it's really relevant today, because after the Senator McConnell Matt Bevin primary, Matt Bevin refused to endorse Senator McConnell, and I don't think Senator McConnell's people have forgotten that yet. So it's going to be interesting to see how that plays. I think there was some sense among Republicans, and I have a number of Republican friends, including the folks here with me today. But, you know, there was some concern that Matt Bevin may not be the best candidate to take on Jack Conway, because some of his views not only are out of sync with what we're going to be promoting on the Democratic ticket, but, you know, Matt Bevin's been attacked by other Republicans on issues such as the federal bailout. They used nifty nicknames like Bailout Bevin. You know, there's a big distinction. He's not your average Republican candidate that lost a primary and now won a primary. It's gonna be an uphill battle, like the media has said.
Greg, did you want to respond to any of that?
Well, you know, obviously, you know, Patrick's alluding to the whole Tea Party versus establishment issue that, no pun intended, but is always the elephant in the room at Republican functions these days. And, you know, I always like to look to history for examples, and Trey has already mentioned the one that I would use as an example, and that is when Rand Paul defeated Trey. Trey was viewed as the establishment candidate. He was supported and endorsed by Mitch McConnell. Rand Paul had views that I think, you know, when he ran in that first U.S. Senate race, were at least portrayed by the Democratic Party to be out of sync with Kentucky, to be a little too far right wing, that his father was a little too far right wing. But we all know what happened in that race. In fact, Rand Paul won very convincingly for U.S. Senate the first time out. And so I'm thinking that this race in the fall is going to be a lot more like that race was in the general. And I and the other point I'll make is that it seems to me, and something that I've seen internally with our folks, okay, because there's still some bickering, okay, amongst our folks. And some of the folks in our camp believe that there were not enough Tea Party people that supported Mitch McConnell after Mitch won the primary. And, you know, the point is they don't come to phone banks. The Tea Party folks didn't come to phone banks and didn't go door to door. And so they're bitter about that lack of support last year. But I think that establishment Republicans are far more inclined to support their party's nominee, regardless of whether it's a, quote, Tea Party candidate or a, quote, establishment candidate. So I don't know. I'm thinking this race is going to be a little more like the Rand Paul race was.
We'll continue our conversation about Kentucky's primary election and what lies ahead in November, and you can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney. Joining us to discuss the outcome of Tuesday's primary and look ahead at what to expect on the candidates and issues as we head into the November general elections are Trey Grayson, CEO of the Northern Kentucky Chamber of Commerce, Attorney Patrick Hughes, who's chairman of the Kentucky Democratic Party, and Attorney Greg Shumate, chair of the Kenton County Republican Party. You can join us at 513-419-7100. Wonder about your thoughts on turnout. 17% statewide. I think it was around 14% in Northern Kentucky. Why such a low turnout?
Ironically, it was a little higher.
I was going to say that's good.
Did it end up being better than you thought?
Yeah, so you had a couple things going on. The lack of primary on the Democratic side meant that you had essentially half the amount of money being spent on television and door to door and mail and radio and everything else. So that was going to suppress turnout overall across the board. The Democrats had, Jack had a primary, but it was very nominal. The treasurer's race was really the only one that was competitive in a primary, and it's not an office that attracts a lot of attention. Northern Kentucky always votes in primaries at a lower rate than the rest of the state. And if you look at past Republican primaries for governor, 03, 07, and 11, the 17% statewide in the Republican primary is pretty good. It's not the high watermark in those last three or four, but it's not the low watermark either. So that was about what people thought. If anything, a little on the high side. Secretary of State Grimes thought it might be around 10% statewide when you account for the Democrats as well, and it would end up being a little bit higher than that. So, it's a May primary. Kentucky is a tough market because of to campaign because you have all these TV markets that are along the border. And especially in Northern Kentucky. I mean, Jamie Comer, for example, did not buy television in this market, like cable or broadcast, because it's so expensive. He relied upon his ground game and used the money elsewhere. So it's tough in these primaries where you don't have as much money to spend, and it just results in lower turnout.
Yeah, and you know, the media market that we're in here in Northern Kentucky specifically, and that's why I traditionally expect lower turnout than the rest of the state. Our media market up here is, a Cincinnati media market, I know one year we were doing polling for Dick Murgatroyd in the race that Dick ran against you, Patrick, and just for fun, we threw out a question about who knew who the governor of Kentucky was and who knew who the mayor of Cincinnati was. And many, many more northern Kentuckians knew who the mayor of Cincinnati was than the governor of Kentucky. So, you know, I think to some extent, you know, where people get their news on a daily basis. Now, that's changing because of the internet and other sources of news. But it clearly, and you know, this year's primary turnout at 14 point something, almost 15%. That's the high watermark in northern Kentucky primary history. Prior to that, in 2003, the Ernie Fletcher primary with Rebecca Jackson and Steve Nunn, that primary only turned out 12%, and up till this year, that was the high watermark. So,
I'd agree with their assessment. It has a lot to do with the media market getting the attention of voters. You know, primaries are going to have low turnouts to begin with because it's your faithful voters, people that vote 5 out of 5 of the last elections, and then coupled that with the media market. And, you know, we should be good that we've got that level of participation in a primary. We'd love to have it more. I know Trey's done a lot of work on trying to build turnout. I think you'll see a big turnout this fall, though. I think, you know, I know that the Conway Overly campaign is going to be they're already moving out and about, and they're going to be hitting northern Kentucky as well.
Hey, Trey, you know, we're talking about media markets, and we're sitting here in Cincinnati, WVXU, and most of our audience is on the Ohio side of the river. So can you tell us who the next Kentucky governor is going to be? Why is that important to the greater Cincinnati area?
Well, there are over 300,000 people that live in Kenton, Boone, and Campbell counties. And if you extend a little bit further south, you get closer to 400,000. So that's a pretty significant chunk. I mean, Cincinnati's about 2 million metro. So that's a pretty good percentage. A lot of people work on one side, live in the other. So the governor of Kentucky is pretty important. You know, and it's an open seat race. We've had Steve Beshear the last two times. And then on a very important local issue, which is the Brent Spence Bridge, and trying to address the traffic clogging that takes place during rush hours and also on Sunday afternoons. I've noticed a lot of traffic on Sunday afternoons. We needed to figure out what to do with that situation. And Governor Beshear and Governor Kasich created a partnership to try to solve it. They couldn't get it finished. There's still some opposition to tolling into the project itself in some areas of northern Kentucky. So that's a big issue for our region. The airport for Greater Cincinnati is in northern Kentucky. The governor has an appointment to that board. So there's a lot of reasons, in addition to the fact that we're all just one community, but a lot of important economic reasons for folks in Cincinnati to care about the governor of Kentucky, and just like we should care on the Kentucky side about who the governor of Ohio is and the mayor of Cincinnati.
Patrick, you agree with that?
Absolutely. Trey's right. You know, northern Kentucky is an essential part of the region. It's an essential part of Kentucky. We refer to ourselves as a donor region because we've got a strong economy, and that allows us to contribute more to the state treasury. But from the other side of the river, you know, our ability to develop strong businesses, a strong economy, have a vibrant airport, make sure the infrastructure there, that's essential to Ohioans and Indianans and Kentuckians as well. Not to mention, you know, you do have a major interstate coming through here, and the Brent Spence Bridge is a priority infrastructure, really for the entire eastern half of the United States. And so, you know, we're going to keep pressing that issue. Regionally, that's really an economic development issue more than it's a political issue. We'd like to press on our Majority Leader McConnell to maybe throw his weight around a little bit more and revisit the federal funding aspect of that.
We're talking about the results of the Kentucky primary and what's ahead in the race for governor with Trey Grayson, CEO of the Northern Kentucky Chamber of Commerce, Attorney Patrick Hughes, Chairman of the Kentucky Democratic Party, and Attorney Greg Shumate, Chair of the Kenton County Republican Party. Thanks to Bonnie McMurray for listening to 91.7 WVXU today. And let's talk with Will from Northern Kentucky. Good afternoon, Will.
Yes, good afternoon. It's a great panel. I'm just curious about one aspect. Matt Bevin's acceptance speech, you know, like he was a winner, was the most bizarre one I've ever heard. He's a very strong speaker, very confident, and that's good, but he did not immediately acknowledge Comer or the race at all. He started going through all the other statewide races, agricultural, Secretary of State and all that, and mentioning them. Then he went to the governor's race and did it alphabetically. So he kind of, from a lay point of view, like myself, not experts like the panel here, it seemed like he disrespected him, and I was just curious what the purpose of that was. Is that the continuation of how he dealt with McConnell by not endorsing him but saying I'll support him or something. And just a radical difference between that and Comer, even though the race is so close. So I like your panel's, you know, opinion on that.
You like your perspectives. Okay.
Everybody's looking at each other. Nobody wants to jump in on this. Well, I'll show some courage here. You know,
thank you, Greg.
I watched the speech as well, and quite frankly, I thought it was a really good speech. I like the We Are Kentucky piece. It was very catchy. It's clear that those remarks had been written in anticipation of a victory well prior to the event that night. I felt like, as I watched the event, that you know he continued a theme that I saw at a lot of Lincoln dinners this year. You know, which is, hey, congratulations to folks for throwing their hat in the ring, like Teddy Roosevelt said. You know, and you know, just by putting your hat in the ring, you've made our state a better place. And that was that part of the speech, I think, that Matt gave, and it was a similar speech that I had heard before. So I agree that the victory speech, when you're not a victor yet, but I'm not sure what speech you give there. You know, your supporters had been out waiting. I know that the television was getting ready to go off the air.
Everybody's expecting to hear something.
Everybody's expecting to hear something. And there's a lot of pressure on the candidate. You know, they're sitting in a hotel room somewhere. You know, the supporters are down in a ballroom. Somebody's going into that room every few minutes saying, are you guys going to come out yet or not? You know, we've got a lot of restless people. We got TV reporters. We got all this stuff. And you want to get your speech on television. You want to get your speech out in front of folks. So I think that was part of the reason why they pulled the trigger when they did. It was mainly because of the television coverage and the supporters in the room.
If I could add something, one of the things that I learned when I was in the Senate race, because when I was running for Secretary of State, I didn't have a primary in either race, so I'd never had a primary victory or concession speech, and I was actually a conversation I shared with Mitch McConnell, and he was talking with me about what you should say on election night in a primary, and he said at the end of the day, a primary victory speech or a primary concession speech is probably about 2/3 the same, because at the end of the day, if you're the winner of the primary, you want to thank your supporters and look to the fall, but the only way to win is to convince the loser's supporters to come into the fold. And so it's kind of a regrouping, it's party building, it's bringing everybody back together. Well, if you're the losing candidate and you really do believe in the party's principles, you have to play a role in pushing your people to the victor's side a little bit. And at the end of the day, it's about party unification. And so a lot of the speech, a good primary night speech, win or lose, ought to be about unification and positioning for the fall, and I didn't catch necessarily the sort of the disrespect to Comer in that, but he obviously did, you know. But I would say yesterday he did an interview with James Pilcher at the Inquirer, and he said I think much better things about Comer, in sort of acknowledging, you know, yeah, he should do the re-canvass, I'd do the same thing, but that unification of the party starts on primary night, and both the winner and the losers need to have their speeches do that.
Yeah, I think that's an astute observation that Will heard that. And I think it's indicative of the fact that, like Trey mentioned, this primary had to go personal. It went personal, very personal. And I think there are some conflicts still among the Republican candidates, and we'll see if they're able to overcome those in the coming weeks.
And before we end this, any surprises in the down-ticket races? Did anybody see anything that you've...
You know, I pretty much picked. I think it went exactly as I had expected.
Yeah, I thought that the wild card with the down ticket races, and we in the Republican Party have seen this in the last couple of years, is it's hard to get your name and brand, and people know who's the better candidate. And in this particular year, the candidates that the party probably wanted to push forward, because they're younger candidates who won the down ticket, those were the ones that won. And I think the Democratic Treasurer's race, you had a state representative win, Rick Nelson, who I believe got labor union support, which wasn't he the one who got the labor support? Although he didn't spend the most money, so that was
surprise. He actually didn't spend a lot of money at all. He's from Bell County, former state legislator, retired teacher.
Good guy. Nice guy.
Coal mining family, great speech giver. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he was able to win that on old-fashioned politics.
Yeah.
And he's going to make a great addition. You know, similar to the Republican down ticket, you know, we've got a very young ticket as well with folks like Andy Beshear and Allison Lundergan Grimes and Adam Edlin and Jean Marie Spann. So it's going to be an exciting couple months as we head towards November 3rd.
Well, Trey, Patrick, and Greg, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. Trey Grayson is CEO of the Northern Kentucky Chamber of Commerce, Attorney Patrick Hughes, Chairman of the Kentucky Democratic Party, and Attorney Greg Shumate, Chair of the Kenton County Republican Party. The Northern Kentucky Forum is presenting Cafe with Trey, an insider's guide to the 2015 gubernatorial race. It's tomorrow at the Gruff in Covington at 9 o'clock in the morning. Northern Kentucky Chamber of Commerce CEO Trey Grayson is going to be discussing the primary election and sharing his insights on the upcoming general election. You can get more information on that. There's a link to it at WVXU.org. And the Northern Kentucky Forum is a partnership of the NKU Scripps Howard Center for Civic Engagement, Vision 2015, and Legacy.